Good morning. The title of my talk is Chlamydia and Gonorrhea Infection Among Female Family Planning Clients Diagnosed with Pelvic Inflammatory Disease in California from 2003 to 2005. I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors listed here from the California Department of Public Health, STD Control Branch, and the Office of Family Planning, and our laboratory colleagues from Quest Diagnostics Unilab. Over 1 million reported chlamydia cases and over 358,000 gonorrhea cases in U.S. were reported in 2006. 3/4 of these chlamydia cases were reported in women. We know that chlamydia and gonorrhea are important causes for pelvic inflammatory disease, or PID, the leading risk factor for tubal factor infertility and ectopic pregnancy. We also know from the Scholes randomized clinical trial in 1996 that chlamydia screening reduces the risk of PID by 60%. These and data from retrospective studies of PID form the basis for national recommendations for widespread chlamydia screening of young women to identify and treat infection to prevent adverse reproductive consequences. However, while chlamydia screening coverage has increased since the release of these recommendations, screening is only reaching about 50% of sexually active young women. There are some important comparisons between findings from older studies of PID and our current understanding of PID cases that should be noted. Older PID case studies from before the 1990s were characterized by the inclusion of hospitalized and likely more severe cases, the inclusion of participants who are laparoscopically confirmed cases whose diagnosis was further supported by pathologic and histologic findings, and the use of culture specimens taken from the endometrium and fallopian tubes. These studies found that 50 to 75% of PID cases were associated with chlamydia and or gonorrhea. When we examine the current profile of PID, we first note from national data that there has been a declining incidence of reported PID cases, but the reliability of reporting PID raises questions about these trends. For instance, current PID cases are much more likely to be treated as outpatients as opposed to being hospitalized. PID cases have also been identified using relatively inconsistent clinical criteria, and current testing has been limited to cervical and or urine specimens. Consequently, in light of these changes in the identification and management of PID, the role of chlamydia and gonorrhea in the current epidemiology of PID needs reassessment. So our study objective was to estimate the prevalence of current chlamydia and gonorrhea infection among family planning clients diagnosed with PID in outpatient settings. Our methods were based on the following. First, the design was cross-sectional and involved two key data sets. One data set was the paid claims data from the Family Pact Family Planning Program in California for dates of service from 2003 to 2005. This program provided comprehensive reproductive health services to approximately 1.5 million low-income Californian women annually during this period. The other data set included chlamydia and gonorrhea line-listed test result data from Quest Diagnostics Unilab for the same period, from 2003 to 2005, in just the subset of Family Pact clients tested by this laboratory. Quest Diagnostics accounts for about 18% of all the chlamydia testing in Family Pact, and nearly 95% of these tests were nucleic acid amplification tests, or NATs. We use the following case definition for PID. Claims, paid claims, with the following ICD-9 codes for PID are listed here, and associated NDC treatment codes for either a 3-drug regimen or a 2-drug regimen that was consistent with the 2002 CDC STD treatment guidelines for PID at the time. For the final study sample, we included PID clients who were able to be linked to chlamydia and gonorrhea test results by unique client HAP identifier. Further, the test results with a date 14 days prior through 30 days after the PID date were used for prevalence estimates. And we use this wide window because billing dates for laboratory test claims can lag behind dates for PID clinical services and vice versa. Finally, we excluded clients not tested by Quest Diagnostics Unilab and cases with missing chlamydia and gonorrhea results. Well, this simple flowchart shows how we arrived at the final study sample based on the claims data linkage to the laboratory data. Let's see. So there were, There were 1,209 Family Pack providers that used the Quest laboratory data, and they were associated with over 335,000 chlamydia and gonorrhea test results. There were 4,138 PID cases identified in Family Pack overall during this time. So from those two data sets, we were able to identify 647 PID cases with Quest test results. That were seen by 175 providers during this period. And of these 647 PID cases, 381 PID cases, or 59%, were linked to tests or to test results between minus 14 and 30 days of the PID date. The remaining 266 PID cases had test results outside of this time frame. So this table shows the age and race ethnic distribution for PID cases identified in Family Pact without Quest test data compared with the age and race ethnic distribution for the PID cases with Quest, concurrent Quest chlamydia and gonorrhea test results shown here in the orange columns. The age distribution of the PID cases was essentially evenly divided between younger and older women in both groups. And we did not find statistical differences in the age distribution across these two groups. As far as the race-ethnic distribution of the PID cases, shows that the highest proportion of cases were among Hispanic women. That kind of reflects the Family Pack clinic population in general. However, the PID cases with test results had a significantly lower proportion of Hispanic women and a significantly higher proportion of white females compared with the PID cases without Quest test data. This table shows the age and race-specific chlamydia and gonorrhea prevalence among the 381 PID cases compared with the female clients without a PID diagnosis in the same Quest data set. The overall chlamydia prevalence among the PID cases was 12.6%, with the highest prevalence among adolescents and young adult female PID cases at 20 and 15% respectively, compared with PID cases aged over 25 years who had a 5.5% chlamydia prevalence. In contrast, all the age-specific prevalences for females without PID were significantly lower, as seen here in the last column. When we look at the race-specific chlamydia prevalence estimates for PID cases, the prevalence ranges from 10% among Hispanic PID cases to 21% among women of other race ethnicities. Interestingly, when we examine the race-ethnic differences for non-PID cases in the last column, chlamydia prevalence among African-American females at over 8% is significantly higher than for all other groups. Let's turn to gonorrhea. Here we show the age and race ethnic specific gonorrhea prevalence among the PID cases compared with female clients without a PID diagnosis in the Quest data. Overall, the GC prevalence for PID cases was 2.2%, which is significantly lower than what we saw for chlamydia. The highest gonorrhea prevalence was in the 20-year and younger age group at 4.3%, followed by less than 2% among older females. In contrast, all age-specific gonorrhea prevalences for females without PID were significantly lower, as seen here in the last column, at less than 1% overall. Looking at the race-specific gonorrhea prevalence estimates for PID, the prevalence ranges from 1% among Hispanic PID cases to over 7% among PID cases of other race ethnicity. When we examine race-ethnic differences for non-PID cases in the last column, gonorrhea prevalence among African-American females at 2.6% is significantly higher than for all other groups. So we see the chlamydia and gonorrhea prevalence among outpatient PID cases in family planning is low at 12% compared with older studies of hospitalized PID cases where the prevalence, as you recall, of chlamydia and gonorrhea was at 50 to 75%. More data are clearly needed, though, to assess the impact of screening over time to reduce asymptomatic chlamydia and gonorrhea and consequently the risk of chlamydia and gonorrhea-associated PID. We also note, though, that the chlamydia and gonorrhea prevalence among outpatient PID cases is still significantly higher than among women without PID. And so, therefore, I think we can still say that the case for screening women at risk for chlamydia remains strong based on these data. Secondly, the low gonorrhea prevalence of 2% among outpatient PID cases in family planning settings is consistent with low overall gonorrhea prevalence among females with lower genital tract infections in family planning settings, which has been consistently less than 1%. And thirdly, the significantly higher chlamydia and gonorrhea prevalence among younger PID cases suggests that the etiology of PID in women over 25 may be different than in younger women. And this, again, is consistent with the very, very low levels of cervical chlamydia and gonorrhea infections that we consistently observe among older women in national and local prevalence monitoring data that we collect through the Infertility Prevention Project. So there were only three, main limitations to the analyses that we conducted, but they're big ones. First, with respect to case ascertainment, there were likely inconsistent clinical diagnostic criteria and inconsistent use of billing codes, especially ICD-9 codes for PID. There was no validation of ICD-9 codes against clinical data, and thus there was potential for lower sensitivity and specificity of the case definition due to potential misclassification of PID cases. Secondly, with respect to the chlamydia and gonorrhea prevalence estimates, not all PID cases were tested. And by that we mean we are concerned about the potential for bias in our estimates due to the 40% of PID cases that were not linked to test results within the test period I mentioned, the minus 14 to 30 days. We also made the assumption that lower genital tract chlamydia infection is concordant with upper genital tract infection in PID. Older studies based on culture tended to isolate a higher proportion of chlamydia and gonorrhea infections from the cervix than from tubal and abdominal specimens of acute PID cases. On the other hand, use of NATS, the amplified tests, with significantly higher sensitivity than culture can capture DNA associated with non-viable organisms that may have a role in ascending infection. And lastly, there were no other data available related to the prevalence of other PID-associated organisms and conditions such as anaerobic bacteria, mycoplasmas, and bacterial vaginosis to evaluate their current role in PID. So some recommendations based on these findings are as followed. First, increased testing for chlamydia and gonorrhea for suspected PID is needed and important for appropriate treatment to prevent further complications, and especially in light of emerging fluoroquinolone resistance in gonorrhea. Second, use of administrative databases should be further developed for ongoing monitoring of outpatient chlamydia and gonococcal-associated PID. However, medical record validation against confirmed PID as identified according to this case definition is also needed to further refine PID case definitions and to verify testing. And third, lastly, we should be developing better methods to evaluate the impact of chlamydia and gonorrhea screening on PID incidence. Longitudinal data collection linking incidence trends to screening would be particularly helpful. Increasing screening levels combined with apparent decreases in PID incidence, as Dr. Douglas noted this morning, would suggest such a relationship, but we need stronger data to support this. And as the saying goes, it takes a village to do this work, and here I'd like to acknowledge the wider village at home that contributed to these data. And thank you, and I'm happy to take your questions and comments.